Good morning and welcome. Right now, are you thinking about making a major decision concerning your finances? Is it time to grow and build a lasting legacy? Well, if today is that day when you've decided to invest in real estate property rentals, then let me introduce you to someone who'd like to join you on the journey every step of the way to success. Cassandra Taggart is the president of Real Property Management, Last Frontier, a property management company here in Anchorage. She is also the president of the Landlord's Almanac, one of the largest landlord clubs in the country dedicated to networking, supporting, and training professional landlords, and she is the author of the popular book, Pain or Profit, Secrets of Profitable Rental Property Investor. She is here with us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
We are joined by a very special guest this morning. Margaret Nelson is with Denali Real Estate here in Anchorage, an expert of the area, bringing to her clients a wealth of knowledge and expertise about buying and selling real estate. She joins us for a conversation on passive income as it pertains to real estate. Always a pleasure to see you, Margaret. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Good
both.
Morning.
Good morning.
Love to see you both.
So how would you define passive income in regards to real estate?
Well, you know, I don't use that big word passive income. I like to talk about it like making money while you sleep.
I like that too.
So you basically invest in real estate and you're making money through the rental of that property over time. And, you know, it's kind of like making money while you sleep.
You know, so many people have asked me, and they've heard that theory before, and they ask, to acquire wealth, can you make money and while you sleep? I mean, it seems so easy, but it takes some steps, doesn't it?
It definitely does. You want to make sure that you have a team to help you while you're doing that, because this is not something that you're doing most of the time on your own. So you want to make sure that you have a really good team with you. Of course, we've got to have a good property manager.
She's right there.
Andra,
found one.
To help you with that. But you also need a good real estate broker who knows how to run those numbers. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to run those numbers. And when you're talking about running numbers, well, what does that mean, really?
Well, it means, for example, not running a fourplex and saying the trash bill's $45 just to trick somebody into buying it.
Yes.
That sounds important.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Does a real estate agent need to know or have an extensive knowledge about rental properties and selling homes at the same time?
Well, it's kind of like any other expertise. I like to tell my clients, look, if you're going to buy an income property, then you really want someone who understands what it is to own income property. You wouldn't go to a doctor who doesn't know how to be a doctor, so you really have to go to someone in the field, a real estate broker or licensee, mm-hmm. who understands what ownership of property is.
So to kind of help out here for a second, one of the reasons why I enjoy working with Margaret so much is that not only is she a broker, she is an actual investor, and she has been investing for several years. This isn't something she just bought yesterday and did her first lease yesterday and now brags saying she's an investor. She's been at it for years. So with me having a background of having a portfolio, Margaret has a portfolio, we understand in our gut with our experience as well as with our knowledge base to say, you could be an investor, but you might not be able to bite into this kind of investment because your stomach can't handle this or can't handle this. And we can help guide them to understand what kind of passive income that they want and fits their lifestyle. Because if you can't match their risk tolerance, their lifestyle, as well as the kind of investment they want, they'll just hate rentals, they'll hate real estate. And we don't want that.
No.
We love real estate so much, we want everyone to have fun with it.
You know, it seems that the questions you ask before you invest will have massive implications in terms of how you manage your property. Like, will you implement a long-term or a short-term strategy? Are they both advantageous to the investor, short and long-term?
Well, it really depends upon what you're doing. So let's build a foundation first, okay? So we're going to start with, what are you doing when you're doing this? Well, you're trying to create wealth.
Right.
Right? You're trying to figure out ways to make more money. Let's face it, that's what we're here for. We're not looking for a home. We're not looking for a nest. We're not looking for our sanctuary. We're looking for making money. So that's the first thing. So we have to all admit when we start out that wealth is not an hourly thing. It's not a transaction. It's not a one-term thing. It's a long-term accumulation.
Right.
So to build wealth, you have to own something. Well, in this case, we're looking at real estate. And then to own something, you have to make those investment decisions that are risky. And that's where Cassandra was just talking about, do you have the appetite for that risk?
Right.
So we have to start with that basic premise. What kind of risk are you willing to take? And so that's where you start. And once you've kind of determined that core value, like what type of property am I willing to invest in? Am I willing to invest in just a single family owner occupied home in a safe neighborhood? That's one thing versus going and buying a 25 unit building that has a wide variety of tenants.
Should an investor question what experience they have in the rental investment property industry?
They should understand what their foundation is. So, for example, like I grew up with my grandfather doing real estate. So for me, knocking on doors and asking people for rent was just what you do. For others, oh my gosh, knocking on a rent and asking a stranger for money, this is crazy. It's scary. So you have to think, what foundation do you have? What knowledge do you have? And how far does that knowledge take you? So you don't want to overdo it and end up over your head. And you don't want to underdo it and not do anything.
Go ahead.
Well, that's why I was saying you really need a team around you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the next thing. You need to know the market that you're in. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what's going on in our Anchorage market, then you really need to understand what's going on there. Well, maybe you don't have all those tools. So who do you go to? You go to your local real estate broker and you say, okay, what's going on? What are the, you know, what's the vacancy rate? Is the market changing? And so you have to build that team. You have to build your team of who is going to finance it, who's going to help me manage it. How much can I expect the utilities to go up and down? That T word, taxes. What about the taxes?
Ouch.
So, you know, you're absolutely right. You have to ask a lot of questions. You've got to really have a lot of knowledge. And the only place you can do this is by gathering a team around you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. How does one determine what to buy?
So I like to start the conversation when somebody approaches me saying, I want to buy something, and they don't have the goals figured out yet. I usually start the conversation with a little bit of education of, okay, there's four ways you can make money on real estate. You can make it on your cash flow, you can make it on taxes, you can make it on equity, or you can make it on appreciation. Each one of those has a different benefit and a different strategy with your personal finances. So you have to involve your tax person, the broker, the property manager to come together and say, okay, I got a tax problem. Okay, well, can you handle a negative cash flow that will pay later in life? Well, then let's go play a tax play, or let's go play a asset play because we have the ability to decipher off a whole bunch of cash that we can do forced appreciation and sell later. It just depends on what you can handle within your personal finances. And once you're able to answer our questions and we answer your questions, we're able to get closer to a goal and line you up with one that'll fit those. Then we can identify the type of property. Is it a single family, or is it a commercial, or is it a strip mall, or is it just buying another business?
There's another thing just to kind of feed off of that, which is, are you going to buy a long-term rental? Are you looking for long-term cash flow? Are you going to buy a rundown property and flip it? Are you going to buy something and just get the appreciation? So, you know, that's why we were talking about that foundation. Which one do you have the stomach for? Which one is less risky?
Another question that comes into mind, are you prepared to invest in this and the time that it takes to start building this portfolio with investment properties? Is that an important question to ask? Time.
Time is always a great question to ask. That's why I was talking about, is it a long-term portfolio? But if you're a younger person, it's nice to be able to start building that portfolio over time. But that doesn't mean people like you and me, Dave.
My time's running out.
Yeah. But we can still invest in properties for retirement.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I always tell, I work with financial advisors. That's another part of my team. And I say, look, you need to expand your portfolio. It should, in my opinion, of course, your portfolio not only should be in the market, maybe not today, but should always include real estate.
And that's a good point, because with life expectancy being extended, we could live to the age of 100. Many people, I fear, are afraid of outliving their retirement fund. So wouldn't a passive income investment be one of the best options for them?
It's an amazing option. Like, for example, my mother had a little tiny retirement account from one of her jobs she had when she was young, and it's just sitting there, and it wasn't doing anything. And I said, why don't you let me take it out and just throw it in real estate? You don't have to live on the cash flow. You don't have to do anything with it, but keep it maintained.
Sure.
And so what she did is, she, for the last 10 years, she took all the cash flow, reinvested it, got a new roof and a new heater system, knew this. It's like a mean running machine now. And now she's looking at retirement and goes, look, I've got 2,000 cash flow on this one thing that I wouldn't have had if I left it over here. But because I used one avenue of my whole portfolio on a real estate asset, and I babied it to get to where it needs to be, now she gets to reap the benefits of it. And it's benefits that she can live on.
You know, that's so important. Not only that, if you have a really good tax professional, you can start using some of your money to create what's called a qualified retirement plan and put off paying those taxes on that income. So it's even gotten better for people who want to use their income or their spare cash to do some real estate investing and make more money and have a more stable sense of financial independence.
Do you find, as a real estate agent in the 21st century, that you're also somewhat of a financial advisor now, especially when we're dealing with this passive income?
Definitely. That's why I talk about teams so much. You have to have someone who understands taxes, who understands finances, who understands how you're going to navigate through this journey of life and how you can best use all that. You know, they don't teach any of that in school,
no,
which is such a shame, because it's very powerful and it could really give you a sense of calm, as we all are getting older these days, for how are we going to live to 100 and be comfortable?
Absolutely, absolutely. And money is such a loaded question these days. It comes with so much baggage, just like religion and other things. Money seems to be one of those, you just never know. You seem to be conflicted these days about how to handle money, whether you should love money, whether you should embrace wealth. It just seems to be one of those loaded issues.
One of the things I really like to talk with my clients about is knowledge. I try and impart as much knowledge about any transaction that they're working on. What does this do? How does this affect you? And the more knowledge you have, the better you are in your investment in your real estate portfolio.
Go ahead.
Education is the key to opening the doors, right? So the more education you have around money, the less emotional response you have to money. So you're not making money a fearful response. You're not making real estate become an extension of that fearful response. You're able to say, no, I'm going to control. I'm going to be accountable to my money. I'm going to understand the knowledge that I can play with my money and understand all the facets of what you could do with your money. Once you understand, and you may not understand all the details, but once you understand the broad versions and the handling of the different options with money, money becomes a partner and not something you hate.
You know, do we want to create more debt first by purchasing a rental property for the reasons of creating passive income?
Yes. That's the short answer. Well, let's talk about that. Debt is not a bad word,
mm-mm,
even though it's four letters.
Right.
It's not a bad word.
The D word, as we call it.
We actually call it leverage.
Yes.
And we've all heard this term, you know, opium, other people's money.
Yes.
You use other people's money and you create leverage. And by doing that, you can gain wealth. So you just have to be smart about it. And if you have the right people on your team, you can start understanding all of this. So why do people not do something? It's because they don't have enough knowledge, which creates fear. Now, if you have a good team on your side and you have enough knowledge, then you don't have as much fear and you know what's going on. That's why I think it's really critical when you start looking at this whole idea of creating money while you sleep, that you understand what the income is, what the expenses are, where can you create more wealth out of your property, like putting in extra parking so that you can charge a little bit more. Or maybe you're going to have that washer and dryer with some, coin operations. There's a lot of ways that you can create more out of what you have.
Landlords. Do you know who hires property managers? It's landlords that want to maximize time and money. Having those unbearable conversations, keeping up with mountains of papers, and having to appear in court again is now a thing of the past. Find out why more Anchorage and Valley landlords are using Real Property Management for their commercial and residential property management. Call us today, 907-290-2022. Real Property Management is the way to go.
Margaret, let me ask you this. It's hypothetical, but what would you say to those who own a home and are now poised to purchase a rental property? Should they pay off their own home first before they jump into passive income?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that, because your home is of course, your castle. But again, it's that concept of leverage. You can use somebody else's money to create more money. Paying off your own home doesn't do that.
Okay. How would you describe the ideal passive income investment? Maybe one makes money?
It's different for everybody.
Okay.
For me, it's a long-term rental. I have friends who bought income property years ago. They're now retired and happily living with the income, the rents coming in every month.
Yes.
They've hired a property manager that they totally trust, someone like Cassandra at Real Property Management, and they are very happy with their income. They don't have the ups and downs of a market, because people, we all need a place to live. We all want a nice place to live. And so for me, it's a long-term rental. For other people, it might not be that. That's why we were talking about that foundation. What appetite do you have? What are you looking for? Now, a lot of the young people I work with today, you were talking about, you get into their first home. I say, get your first home, feel comfortable in that, start out with that small home. As you build your family, you sell that home, use the equity or appreciation that you got out of that home, get into a larger home, so your payment remains the same. You build your family, and then as you have excess funds, of course, you're doing saving, as we all need to do, but then you start looking at income property.
You know, I know your history. I know it's a part of your legacy. You started this passive income building at a very early age. Weren't you a teenager when you...
Yeah, well, it felt like a teenager, but my first home that I bought was a fourplex. And I took advantage of doing an owner-occupied fourplex. And it was absolutely wonderful. It was in the 80s, and I was making money and covering my costs.
And you were relatively young at the age where not a lot of young people were doing that sort of thing, were they?
Right.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So we've got the rental property, and it looks like it's going to take a lot of time and effort. Isn't it time we hire a property manager?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that is important is that you don't want to do everything.
Right.
Some people, they get in the mindset that, oh, I'm going to get this property and I'm going to do the painting. I'm going to do the toilets. I'm going to take those calls in the middle of the night. Well, there are experts out there who have systems in place. And really, when it comes down to it, it's that system. It's the system that helps you make things work. And if you have the expert, you have the expert in maintenance who can take care of things. We've all been in that home and we've seen the walls and we go, boy, that was a do-it-yourselfer.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, think about it yourself. We all look at those homes and go, if they'd only had somebody who knew what they were doing,
right.
I'd pay a little bit more for that. Mm-hmm. Because what they're saying right now is, oh, I'll pay a little bit less for this because it's not quite up to snuff. And so we really need to have those experts on our team. And besides, you are better at creating more wealth by looking at more properties and studying and getting more leverage.
You know, you have mentioned systems in your book, Painter Profit. We've talked about that extensively. The investor who doesn't have a series of systems will more than likely fail. Isn't that the gist of the book?
Yeah, because you end up being more reactionary and not proactive. If you want to be a true passive investor, you have to really understand the leverage of time and money. And yes, there's a time and place where you're going to be the guy who does the snowplow because you're starting your first investment and it had little cash flow and you're doing what it takes until it builds up the equity. There's a time and place for it. But there's also a time and place where you need to use the experts that's going to do an amazing paint job or an amazing profit and loss reports, so that way you know how to maximize the dollars and see the trends. If you don't put that team together to be able to see the trends and understand this is a good fit, not a good fit, this is the time in the market to make your shift or not make your shift, then you're not able to maximize your return on investment. And then you start becoming reactionary with everything, all the way down to, am I going to be able to pay my mortgage tomorrow? And by the way, it was due last week.
Let's talk about your investment. Should we be aware of where we have made our purchase of a rental property to attract renters? And is it all about location, location, location?
Yes, it is. But I think one key thing is you make your money when you buy.
Okay.
Your money comes to you when you buy, not after you buy. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important to know what you're buying. How much cash flow can you expect? What are the market rents for this particular property? Is it in a good area? Because if you have a good property, good tenants, you're going to have a great investment. And yes, so location is certainly a key item.
Do good passive income investors have a tendency to retire early? I'm looking at you, Margaret, because I'm wondering if you're going to retire soon. Because I know you've made great investments. And Cassandra, I'm the only one who doesn't have one.
Well, I have the best job in the world because I don't feel like I work. I mm-hmm. love what I do. And so I get up excited to go to work every day. I love helping people buy and sell properties. I love explaining to them about the opportunities with a qualified retirement
right.
plan. So in a sense, I'm already retired because I'm doing what I love.
Mm-hmm. You know, if done right, can passive income supplement an income that has been erased by job loss? And we've seen a lot of people lose their jobs.
We have several investors that, for example, a few of them were teachers back when teachers were having a huge issue of potentially not having their jobs.
Right.
A lot of them took and reinvested their dollars and moved it out of one and put it in another because we're approved for retirement accounts. So retirement accounts does audits on us and we can manage retirement accounts and run it through rentals. And so they moved all their funds to be able to do rentals and we manage their retirement account, which happened to have a rental. And what they did is they shifted their money from that to that so they could have the passive cash flow income if they needed it due to a potential job transfer or transition that they may have in 5-10 years when it became not stable. And most of them just kept it. They didn't take it and move it back. They just kept it because it was so much more fun and easy and they could see it and they could drive by it and they can watch their investment.
Go ahead.
Teachers are great for that. So are fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
People who fish. Oftentimes, that's the seasonal. Well, what do they do in the off times? Well, they look at real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings up my next question. Is Alaska a good place to start passive income building?
Anywhere is a good place.
Okay.
As long as you know your market, you know your numbers. There are a lot of people here in Alaska that have investments all over the country, if not all over the world.
Something to add that a lot of people misunderstand is that when they hear, oh, they say the market's good. Oh, they say the market's bad. A good investor knows how to play in any market. They just have to understand what the market is saying and doing and what it's forecasting so they can play the game accordingly. So you can say, oh, the market's shifting this way. So we're going to do investments this way for the next 20, or we're going to do investments this way for the next 30 because the market's doing this and my strategy is this. And the only way you're going to know that is putting the right team together that can solve those puzzle pieces for you so you can make a decision. But it starts with making a decision, taking action, and buy something.
And any time is a good market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like we're getting insider information from the two of you professionals. Are there choice pieces of property just waiting to be acquired for purchase in this marketplace?
Yes, there are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're a beginning investor, you really kind of have to set up your own ground rules. So I have some kind of basic rules that I do. I look for single family homes in owner occupied neighborhoods, especially if you're a brand new investor. You want to have less than 35% rentals in the area. Let's face it, we all want to live in areas that isn't a lot of turnover.
Right.
So, again, I talked about how your profit starts at your purchase, or you make your money when you buy. So you want to make sure that you're buying below your market rates when you're first starting out. 10 to 20% would be awesome. So that's another one. By the way, your reward is going to be directly proportionate to the risk. So when you're starting out, you don't really want to have a lot of that risk, because you'll get soured so fast if you lose money, and nobody wants to lose money.
No.
You want to avoid any kind of property that's functionally obsolescent. Well, what the heck does that mean? Well, that means that that you have to walk through the bathroom to get to the bedroom. Mm-hmm. That's kind of an example of functional obsolescence. So you are kind of looking for a cookie cutter property, something that everybody's going to like. And you always know that if you have a problem to begin with, it's not going to go away unless you resolve it. So you can't just buy a problem property unless you have a way to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so those are kind of my basic rules. You look for a great location. You make sure you understand the income, the expenses, what needs to be done to make it attractive. And you follow those kind of basic rules, and you should do well.
Are we a city of renters or buyers, and which is growing faster in the 21st century in the year 2020?
That one's a fun one right now. There's a lot of, so we're sitting at around 47-ish% of tenants that are out there, and a lot of the tenants do want to buy, but they can't buy because inventory is low, and it's making it harder for them to pick that ideal property. So we're kind of what I would say a seller's market, or I don't know how to say all that. That's not my world. That's Margaret's world. But what I can say is, out of my tenant pool, what's happening in my world is that I have a lot of tenants that qualify to buy, want to buy, tell me they want to buy, but then they sign another year lease because they go, nope, it's just not time right now. And they're saying it's not time, not because of the market. They're saying it because they can't find the perfect, or the market's going too fast, or they're too scared. There's other reasons.
Sure.
So that's really an interesting statement. A lot of people look for the perfect property, especially for their first home. There is no perfect property.
Mm-mm.
There's always going to be a trade-off. I think, Dave, you know exactly what we're talking about. Sometimes you can find the property that has that garage, but the bedrooms are going to be a little bit smaller. Or you can't find one with a garage because you want larger bedrooms because you have a bigger family, so you have to settle for the carport. And so a lot of times when I'm talking with clients, I tell them, look, identify your ideal property, but know that there's trade-offs. So right now, yes, it's interesting because we don't have a lot of inventory, but there's stuff out there for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
As long as people are willing to kind of say, okay, I'm looking for a home, I'm looking for the nest. And you can make some changes and know that you're not going to be living in that property forever. The average amount of time people spend in a home these days is between 5 to 7 years.
I did not know that. Well, Margaret is one of the most patient real estate agents there are in this city. She has gone through countless homes with my family, one after the other.
Hello, Alaska. I'm Bad Brad, and this is Jetta. As a team, we're Bad Brad's Bed Bug Busters. If you think you have bed bugs, Jetta's trained nose will be able to detect their presence to give you the peace of mind of being bug-free or the knowledge of exactly where they're located. Bad Brad's uses proven safe and effective heat treatment to bust bed bugs. It will not harm humans or pets, unlike chemical treatments used by the other guys. I will save you money pinpointing the exact location and limiting the treatment accordingly. This will also reduce the inconvenience of treating your entire residence. Jetta and I keep up with the latest research, technology, and training as the only Alaska member of the International Bed Bug Research Authority.
I called Jetta and Brad at 242-2911. And check out their website at badbradsbedbugbusters.com.
Let us do what we do best, kill bed bugs. We're good to you, bad to the bug.
Are young people in their 20s and 30s buying homes in 2020, or are they putting that off until later now? Is this a new generation?
We are seeing people buy homes. Young people are buying homes.
Good.
In fact, that's the largest market segment right now in Anchorage are people in their 30s. Now, they mm-hmm. are waiting a little bit longer, but they're also very interested in buying homes, and they're very happy to buy homes. They are looking for a little bit different home, though, than, say, a prior generation. They're looking for more open areas, more communal spaces, and they're often have plenty of money to buy homes.
Mm-hmm. What they're doing on the renter side of the house is they're not just renting like a little one-bedroom apartment and staying there. They're renting a big house with a whole bunch of them, so they have like a tiny amount of rent so they can save more. So they're coming up with more cash out of their own pocket, or they're staying at their mom's house and coming up with more cash for their first investment. They appreciate leverage, but they don't seem to want 100% leverage like the generation right before them. So they are buying, they're just saving before they buy.
Sure. If young people are holding off on starting families later, what does that do to the market? Is there any kind of repercussions, do you think?
I'm not seeing any repercussions for that. I think people make the decision to buy for a number of reasons. They're tired of renting.
Yes.
They understand that by owning a home, you're building wealth in your own way.
Do you find that older people are downsizing quicker or the same speed as they always have, getting out of these four-bedroom, two-bath houses, moving into condos? Is that a phenomenon?
It would be more if we had more inventory available. Ooh. We have a shortage of inventory, and it's just part of the market right now. It's not bad. It's not good. It's just the way it is.
Sure.
So knowing that helps you understand how to market properties to new people who are coming into the market.
And in my world, what they're doing is they're holding on to those 4 and 5 bedrooms because it's an environment where it's safe and comfortable, and all their stuff's there, and they're not ready to downsize. But what they are doing is they're picking that townhome or that condo when they are patient enough to wait for it, because they're patient enough to wait for it, they'll remodel it and then start making it tenants in there. So that's their house they're going to downsize to, but they're making it a rental until they do decide to do it. I've got a couple where what they did is they bought that thinking that's the one they were going to downsize to, and then they went, oh, it cash flows so well, I might as well just keep it.
Sure.
And went and got another one, said, oh, this one's even more perfect for when we decide to downsize. And then when they go to do the move, they'll just rent it or sell the one that they were in, the big 4 or 5 bedroom house. But I'm not seeing them downsize right now.
The largest segment of people needing homes in Anchorage are seniors and young people.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing figure. Are the laws and regulations of Alaska pertaining to rental properties ever changing and complex? And should an investor be prepared to familiarize themselves with them or leave that to a property manager? Because I know in our talks, they're intricate.
What's happening right now is across all the 50 states is regulations is becoming more of a conversation in the rental world, because you've got more people interested in it instead of just, you know, a few big people that have a lot of properties. Now it's everybody's interested in rental properties as a vehicle for retirement. So it's making it to where there's more regulations that are coming down on the federal level, the state level, and on the city level. And they're all changing all the time. So it's not something that you can willy-nilly just go up and say, all I do is cash a rent check. Now it's all these rules, and any one of those things can give you a fine, and the fines can go all the way up to a fair housing violation of $75,000, and you're not covered by insurance for these fines. So it's important to understand that it's evolving, it's changing, it's fair. All the ones I've seen come through are fair, but if you're not aware of them and you accidentally break the wall, it will hurt you.
Margaret, if our audience wants to talk to you about passive income building, how can they contact you?
My website, denalirealestate.com, is the best place, or they can give me a call or send me an email.
Can you be a mentor to thousands of people?
I'd love to do it. I love teaching, and I, like I've said before, knowledge is so important, and I love sharing my knowledge with people, and I get the best satisfaction out seeing people succeed.
You know, even the best landlords have questions, and we are asking them for Cassandra and Margaret's best advice. Here's our first question. How important is a good photographer when preparing to show a home?
Oh, absolutely. If you're going to sell your home, or if you have investment properties that you're going to sell, you want to present your home in the best light. Consider this. Everybody's looking on a screen. I see you have one right in front of you that's 8x11 or even smaller, and the picture of the home is going to be the size of a thumbnail.
Yes.
It better grab the attention of the buyer, and that's the only way you can do it is by having a good photography.
We just sold the family home of over 65 years in Washington State, and the photographer came in and took pictures of that home that I don't ever remember my father dressing the home up like that. Can photos be digitally tarted up now, and they put things in there that were never there? Like my dad's home, which was run down, was beautiful. And I know dad didn't do that. Do they have the capability of digitally?
No, you don't want to do too much because you're presenting the home in its best light.
Absolutely.
You're not changing the home from what it is, because buyers will come in, and that's the worst thing is to have them go, oh, it doesn't look like the picture.
Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a certain amount of honesty.
Right.
Holding up my hands in quotes, because you don't want to present the home more than what it is. But at the same time, you want to make it look the best way possible to sell it.
Absolutely.
And you have to know, if you're an investor, you have to know those marketing ideas or hire the best person who can market it for you.
And there are photographers here in Anchorage that can do just that?
Oh, absolutely.
Plenty. And the reality of marketing is that you're basically having to put an ad together that beats the competition. So does your ad explain everything? Is your ad accurate? Because getting the showings isn't as important as getting the offer or getting the application. So you have to make it realistic, and you have to make it to where it is enough of a visual to where somebody wants to go see it or gets an idea of what the expectations are going to be. In the rental world, most ads only have like two pictures.
Sure.
Ours, we made a standard in our company at Real Property where it's a minimum of 20 pictures minimum, plus a walkthrough video, plus an ad that's over a page long, because any one of those could be the platform that a person likes to see and watch and catch.
Well, I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty standard in the industry that if you have more photos or a video or a walkthrough, that you're going to get more people looking at your property. And that's what it's all about, getting more people into that property to buy it and to get the most money you can for it.
Here's our next question. What do I do with a car that's been left behind on my property? Let the troopers handle it, or do I eat the cost myself?
Boy, that's a really interesting one. As Cassandra probably knows, we've all faced this where a car has been left behind.
Right.
No, you have to, if it's been truly abandoned, you have to work on getting the title transferred in your name, which can take some time before you can even move that car.
Oh, sounds like a lot of work. So how do I get rid of a stale weed smell in my properties?
When you buy or you're renting a property, smells are a thing, whether it's a cooking smell, whether it's a smell of smoking, weed, whatever it is. Everybody's got a smell of some kind that has to be eradicated. There's different things that you can do. It could be a light smell, so a simple carpet cleaning and a simple washing walls could have done it, fixed it. Like good detailed cleaners that do what they call move-out cleaning, like true move-out cleaning, where they clean the tops of cabinets, because usually it's stuck on the top of cabinets. Or you can go deeper into the cleaning if you have to, which involves painting of the place. There's also these things, what I like to call smoke bombs. There's only a few facilities where you can buy them here in town, and it's this little spray that you set off in the middle of the house, leave it for several hours, come back, and it puts this deodorizer on everything, and it eats it. So then the house smells like pine cones, but it eats the other odors
right,
and eventually gets rid of it. Or you may have to go all the way through full paint, full carpet change, everything, depending on how heavy the smoke was. You may even have to go as far as doing kilts and primer before you even start the process of putting it back together. So that's why inspections matter, because it won't go that bad if you're actually watching your place.
So the other thing you can do is an ionizer. You can rent these ionizer machines that actually pull the stale smell out. But they only work so much if it's we've all had those heavy smokers in our properties where you have to just literally paint and paint and paint to get rid of the smell. That's why there's no smoking anymore.
One of our listeners wants to know, does Anchorage have a normal bed bug problem, or is it out of control?
Normal? There, I don't think there's anything, any such thing as normal in bed bugs. You know, people get really freaked out about them, and as they should. There's a mental issue with them. Yes, we have a problem. There are upwards of one in three properties have bed bugs in this town, and that's a scary thing.
Absolutely.
So as an investor, I'm always saying, hey, let's inspect for them first, because the inspection is fairly cheap. The eradication of them is not so cheap, even if you use chemicals. And by the way, the over-the-counter chemicals really don't work. It takes a lot. You'd have to drench yourself in those chemicals, and nobody wants to do that. So again, you have to have a good team member and a team to come and do that for you.
And that's something I want to give a shout out to for Margaret, is she's one of the most amazing agents that know to licensees that know to put it as part of their offer and part of their process to have it at least inspected through the inspection process, not just the normal inspector, but actually do all the pest inspections. Because there is a trend in this town where investors go, oh, bed bug fixing is too expensive. We'll throw it up for sale and see if we could pass it to the next guy to deal with the fixing of it. And when you don't know about that kind of stuff, it's thousands when it's a big problem. Because you have to heat the place, especially if you deal with the roach infestation. That one's really bad, because sometimes you have to get everyone out of the building and end all the leases and then deal with it, because that's a hard one to fight as well. So be careful.
Ladies.
Well, that's really...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's so important to do your inspections and know your property before you buy it. It comes along with that. Make sure you make money when you buy. And the only way to do that is to know the property.
Rich, how can investors find out more about joining the Landlords Club?
The best way is the website, which is thelandlordsalmanac.com. Or just give us a call about anything and we'll get you guided in the right direction. So 907-268-4779.
And they can go to the Facebook page, because I have gone there. It is a valuable resource.
That is a great forum place for you. Lots of conversation. We average over somewhere around 600 conversations in a month.
And let's talk about that podcast. Where can they listen to your podcast at?
If you go to the website, it actually gives you all the links to the podcast, or you can go to any podcast app and type Landlord Conversations and you'll find us.
And what kind of resources does being a member of this exclusive club provide?
Forms, documents, connections with other landlords, other trade people, so you can build your professional team.
And Margaret, do you make yourself available to mentor new investors here in the marketplace?
Absolutely. I love helping buyers and sellers with any kind of property.
And how can they get a hold of you? That is so important.
DenaliRealEstate.com is my webpage, and they can certainly call me anytime at 907-632-4594.
Well, it has been a pleasure to have you both here in the studio. Cassandra and Margaret, thank you for your knowledge, your passion, and your guidance over this last hour. You are, as I'm sure our listeners now know, invaluable resources and experienced advisors for those who are investing in real estate and taking their first steps toward success. Cassandra will join us a few weeks for another Conversation Unlimited. To you both, have a good week. Stay safe. I'm Dave Show. Have a good day.